You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, I'm Alan Cardoza, and you're listening to Answers for the Family. This show was born out of a desire to help guide parents and adolescent service industry professionals alike to professional resources as they face critical moments with their children and/or clients. Today, our guest is going to be Lisa Foley. Lisa is the supervisor of therapeutic services for Willow Springs Center. But before we get to Lisa, I want to wish happy belated Mother's Day to all the mothers listening, especially my own. Personally, I had a great weekend in Vegas with my mom, and that's where she chose to go, folks. It was great to see her having so much fun with her friends that she's known for over 50 years. Mom, I hope you're still having a great extended Mother's Day. I also want to share with everybody that I saw a great play this weekend. Friday night, I saw Louis and Keeley at the Geffen Playhouse, and it was so good that I'm confident it'll come to a venue near you soon. Absolutely, don't miss it. Also, special thanks to Roger Harrison for having our Wild Lunch Bunch as his guests. So, Lisa,
Hi,
welcome.
Alan.
How are you?
Good.
Did you have a great weekend?
Oh, it was so beautiful here in Reno. It was awesome.
All right. Now, are you a mother?
I am. I have three children, two girls that are 16 and 14, and a boy that's 10.
And did they take care of you and make it a very special weekend for you?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, let's kind of get to what it is that we're here to talk about, and we're going to talk about residential treatment. Why don't you just share with our listeners a little bit, what is residential treatment?
Well, residential treatment is out-of-home placement. So we have 76 beds in our facility, and the kids come and live here and get intensive treatment while they're here.
Okay. Well, I mean, who typically goes to residential treatment in general? Now, I mean, more so with adolescents. I mean, we know that there's residential treatment for adults. But let's talk a little bit about the typical patient, adolescent patient.
Absolutely. Kids typically that come to residential treatment are kids that have, you know, failed outpatient treatment. These are patients that continue to struggle in their homes, in their communities, in their educational settings with behavioral problems. They could be acting out in an aggressive way or an aggressive fashion, property destruction, physical aggression, verbal aggression, or they could be even acting in. You could see depression, self-harm behavior, isolation, withdrawal. And, you know, typically these patients haven't responded to inpatient acute treatment, which we know is more of a triage type treatment setting, and they're not being successful in outpatient treatment.
What would be the typical stay? In other words, how long is a normal stay for an adolescent? Or is there one?
Anywhere. Yeah, you know, it can vary greatly depending upon individual presentations, but I'd say generally our length of stay is anywhere from about 3 to 6 months.
Okay. And is that, I mean, explain the reasoning for that. In other words, I think we all know that there's, you know, some of the statistics and stuff that say that you really need probably 21 to 28 days to either start a new habit or to end an old habit. So how is it that we come to 3 to 6 months as an average?
Well, typically those 21-day stays are based on substance abuse treatment. And, you know, the truth is that good residential treatment for adults in this country doesn't exist unless it's substance abuse treatment. So what we know is that it takes longer to typically treat these complicated family system dynamics and complicated, you know, case presentations that a lot of our patients are struggling with. So it's a very intensive program, and we're really focused on transformational change. So we're not doing, you know, just a quick fix 21-day Band-Aid.
Okay. Well, for the listeners out there, why don't you define transformational change?
Well, transformational change for us is to really figure out what the root causes are of the issues that are going on not only with our patients but within their families. So, you know, the patient may be, the adolescent may be the one that is exhibiting, you know, impairment in the family by acting out, or by, you know, having trouble in school, or by being aggressive, or, you know, depressed, any of these, you know, emotional symptoms that are coming on. And what we have found is that oftentimes, especially with adolescents, is that there's a lot of things going on at home that are contributing to that.
Wow, that's a great point. And how much of it do you think that just performing a parentectomy is helping?
Well, oftentimes our families are to the point where they're ready for change. By the time one of our kids have gotten to residential treatment, you know, the family system is, you know, under stress, under the gun, and feeling overwhelmed. So, you know, the family oftentimes is very invested in, you know, supporting the kid through their individual treatment, but also in looking at what they're doing to contribute to, you know, what the problem is that's going on.
And then what about the kids that part of the problem that they have now is they've gotten so far behind in school that, you know, they've almost given up. They just think, you know, well, you know, I'm a year and a half behind. How am I ever going to catch up?
Absolutely. So, you know, part of that transformational change is looking at the person in the environment. And so all of our kids go to school when they're here. We have a wonderful school program even through the summer. So they're able to do credit recovery because they're going to be in school. You know, we're looking at the school and, you know, the year ending soon. And so all of the kids that are in the hospital now will be able to take advantage of summer school. So that's an important aspect. The other thing, especially for listeners that are in California, is that part of, you know, the intensive programming that we do here is to really look at accessing and hooking parents up with local resources. And there's a great resource in California, which is through the AB 3632 funding through the school district. So a lot of the work that we do is educating families about how to access those resources and then what the kids might be needing to help support their recovery once they go home.
I think that's great. I know that there's also advocates here in California as well that will that will help them with the AB 3632 issue. And any parents that are out there, know that at times when you contact your school district, and especially now with the manner of funding issues that we're dealing with, I mean, everybody's trying to save money within the school districts pretty much everywhere, but they're oftentimes not going to be as excited about wanting to jump in there. So if you can either have, you know, the program help walk you through or get an advocate that understands how to get through that system and to get that funding for your child, it's definitely the way to go.
Absolutely. And the good news is that there is a lot of resources available, and we can, you know, we work very closely with the school districts in California to make sure that the kids get you know, a seamless transition so that they're able to access those resources, you know, upon discharge.
Now, what are some of the other resources, again, for the parents that aren't in a position to do this as a private pay option?
Yeah. You mean residential as a private pay option?
Yeah. In other words, you mean you said that there's other resources. Are there other resources other than the AB 3632 funding?
Well, believe it or not, part of the advocacy work that we do here is educating parents about accessing the criminal justice system.
Excellent.
And that may seem counterintuitive, that in fact many of our kids are suffering from, you know, emotional disturbances and behavioral stuff. And what we have found both, you know, in many states, because a lot of kids come from, you know, different states other than Nevada, but educating them about accessing the criminal justice system, because what the criminal justice system brings is resources. And that's a really important thing that most people don't know about.
Well, and I think that's great. And as somebody who has, you know, who transports the kids to the programs, yours as well, we end up transporting some of them directly from, you know, from juvenile hall or from court. And it's amazing. I mean, how, I mean, a judge will look at a situation and say he understands or she understands that sending this particular child into juvenile hall or into a jail setting is going to be counterproductive. So as Lisa is saying, if you know how to access that and you know how to get the information to them, these judges want these kids out of the system. They want them to get the help that they need. You just have to know how to get to it. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And for many families, you know, having a probation officer involved in the family or in the kid's situation is incredibly beneficial, because now that the probation officer is involved, then there's an additional a level of accountability for that adolescent.
Right. Actually, I like your words, a level of accountability. We tend to call it leverage. And I tell the parents, and the parents will go, but what happened? You know, my child's been arrested. What am I going to do? This is horrible. How do we get them out of it? And I go, you know, it just might be the leverage you need.
So. Absolutely. And we, in fact, don't want them to get out of it. The research is very clear that kids that come into treatment, you know, involuntarily, that are in fact court ordered for treatment, do just as well as kids that come into a program voluntarily.
Right. And it's a great point, because to the parents out there, what are you empowering them to think if they think, I don't have any consequences for what it is that I did? You know, my parents saved me again. They got me out of juvenile hall, or they got me out of jail. That's certainly not teaching them that in real life it's not going to happen. You know, there's not going to be
no, that. And you know, and that really brings up this other point, Alan, that I think is very important, is that, you know, about the emotional piece and teaching kids about how to manage their emotions. And this cannot be, you know, emphasized enough. You know, we, to be honest, are moving into a society, you know, we've seen it happening, you know, in the past decades, where we're moving into this narcissistic society where it's the me generation. Mm-hmm. It's what I want, feels good for me. And parents are enforcing that, reinforcing this idea by removing any level of consequences for negative behavior. And so a lot of what we do is about educating family systems about how to stand back enough to let our children suffer the consequences of the choices that they make, you know, in terms of the concrete consequences, but also emotionally. Mm-hmm. You know, when you make a mistake, you feel guilty.
Right.
And that's a very good feeling to have, because that guilt teaches you that you did something wrong.
Right.
And then we go back to empathy, integrity, honesty, courage. I mean, the fundamentals of what does it mean to have strong character.
That's right. I couldn't agree more. Now, one of the things that I get from parents where they're contacting us, either because their child has run away and they're asking us to find them, or they're just contacting us to do the transport, they constantly say, how do we know it works? How are we going to know? How is it measured? I know that it's a question that comes to us. We can't answer it, because each program is different in the way that they measure it. How do you measure it?
Well, I think we measure it in a couple of different ways. Certainly individually, that our adolescents are communicating more effectively. We really do an excellent job of assessing, you know, a myriad of issues. But, you know, one of the important things, I think, is communication style. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, just identifying where that kid is in terms of being passive-aggressive, being aggressive, being assertive, and really doing some education about what type of communication works best. And then, you know, so one of the things that we definitely see pretty straightforward is that communication improves. And sometimes that's difficult. Sometimes, you know, the parents have a hard time hearing what the kids have to say, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So we do a lot of intensive work around open, honest, direct, effective communication. Additionally, I think that we see a lot of improvement in terms of compliance, that the kids understand that there are consequences to the choices that they make, and they're increasingly willing to do what is expected of them, because they understand that there's going to be consequences if they choose to not participate. So certainly those are two big things. And we just see our families being happier. The kids are happier, families are happier, and they're able to, you know, go on and become the young men and women that they're meant to be.
Mm-hmm. Now, how do you deal with the adolescent that says, you're making a mistake? There's nothing wrong with me. I come from a dysfunctional family.
Right. Well, certainly that's part of, you know, the stages of treatment. So certainly we get a little bit of that just when we go through resistance with the kids when they first come in. You know, and a lot of times it is complicated. A lot of times there are problems in the family system. A lot of times there is poor communication or impairment in the family in some way. So I think it's very important to respect our kids and to listen to them and to work on having them feel validated and heard.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that that's a really important part of treatment.
Well, that's good for us. I mean, as far as the transport side, because our answer to that is, that's the beauty of the program you're going to, is they can help you deal with being raised in a dysfunctional family, if that's the case. So
absolutely,
we're not jumping on the bandwagon and saying, hey, you must be right. We're just saying, if that's the case, that's the beauty of this, which mm-hmm. which diffuses any part of an issue of, I shouldn't be going. Now you can't argue that you shouldn't be going, because why would we want to leave you in a dysfunctional position?
Well, you know, additionally, you know, for many of our kids and our families too, they need respite.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, a lot of times by the time a situation has gotten to the point where a kid is going to be looking at, you know, an out-of-home placement, everybody's tired. And so it's a great chance for the family and for the kids to get just kind of like a world stop. You know, everything just kind of stops, and it's an opportunity for them to really focus on themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit about the types of therapies or activities that that the kids go through.
Okay. Well, certainly all of our patients come with a psychiatric diagnosis. And so, you know, the incredibly important part of treatment here is going to be the therapy. And we have incredibly small caseloads, so our therapists have 8 kids in their caseload that they're responsible for, and they're going to be getting intensive individual therapy. And that's very, very important, because we want to be really exploring the individual issues, helping develop coping skills, communication skills, and really helping them kind of gain some understanding and some insight into what their, you know, issues are about, and helping them establish some boundaries.
Excellent.
In addition, we do family therapy every week, intensive family therapy. And even for our families that are out of town, we do it over the phone. And then the families, you know, are expected to be here on site as often as they're able.
That's great. Yeah, that's always been one of my pet peeves, that is the, you know, the child that goes through a program, and if the parents have not gotten on board, they go back in the same environment, they fall back into the same issues, the same problems, the same habits, and then, you know, I've had parents contact me when we're now having to go out and look for them and saying, well, I don't know what we're going to do, the program failed. And I've had situations in which it's been about, say, the third time that I'm now talking to them, and I've said, you know, what's the common denominator?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I had one parent that actually thought about it, and he went, oh my God, it's me. He said, you know,
the important part too is to teach the parents the language of treatment, the language of recovery, you know, really helping them to understand the experience and this intensive experience that the kids are having through the time that they're here. And that can be powerful.
Absolutely.
For the families and for the kids.
Yeah, and to learn the structure. If they understand the structure that the child's going through, it's easier to maintain that structure than it is for them that was probably unable to build the structure they needed in the home to begin with.
Yep, and as you know, a lot of our families are blended families. There's complicated, you know, family trees.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, again, working on that family system is incredibly important so that when the kid comes home, that there's good generalization, that that we've taught them how to take what they've learned in this facility and apply it to their home life, apply it to their school setting, and really make those changes be environmental and across environments.
Well, how do you determine, based on the philosophy that Willow Springs has, that it's a good fit for a particular child versus a philosophy of maybe some of the other programs?
Well, I think our program is unique in that, number one, I already mentioned that we really look at the person in the environment. So it's not limited to this narrow vision of what the patient is doing here. It is really about what's going on at school, what's going on at home, looking at the social setting, the peer group. You know, so we're really looking at all of the things that impact this kid. In addition, we really believe and hold incredibly dear the idea that change happens in the therapeutic relationship. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we attach to these kids, we care for them, they care for us, and there's, you know, doesn't take very long for them to quickly figure out that these are people that are in their corner.
And in fact, yeah, do you have a like an alumni type of situation to where some of the kids that are maybe our alumni get back involved with some of the newer kids coming in to maybe help them understand what they're about to go through?
Well, we certainly have a waiting period for that. We'd like to see kids be out of our program and doing well and making sure that they are, you know, going on with their lives and really applying what they've learned and have a good, solid recovery before we want them to come back here. But we have had that happen in the past. And we certainly have wraparound services. So one of the great things about Willow Springs is that, you know, we provide you know, a hospital support program after they've left here. There is a support group that they can attend every week.
Nice.
As well as outpatient services. There's intensive outpatient program. So there's wraparound services, which again, you know, the research is very clear that that is an incredible protective factor.
Mm-hmm. Now, what are the specific stages of treatment? So, you know, once they, you know, I've heard different theories or different stages in the way certain programs set it up. How do you set up the stages that the child goes through?
Well, you know, certainly the stages of treatment, I would say, are more client-driven. It's something more that we've observed rather than something we've set up. And what my experience is that, you know, kids, especially kids that come through the criminal justice system or the juvenile justice system, are pretty happy to be here once they get here. You know, it's the food is good. It's a beautiful hospital. I mean, they're really going, okay, this is not so bad. And so there'll be a bit of a honeymoon period. And in addition, you know, kids that come from family systems, like I said, that have been in crisis, you know, are pretty happy just to have the respite. So they'll have a bit of period of about, you know, it depends, but usually it doesn't last too much longer than a week, where they're pretty happy to be here. They're saying, you know, all the right things that, you know, I really want to make changes and my life isn't working and, you know, I'm really ready to engage. And what we have found is very quickly they move into resistance.
Okay.
Resistance is the stage where you were kind of talking about before, Alan, like, you know, I don't really need to be here. This is really too much, too soon. I'm sure I can be successful in outpatient treatment. I really have learned my lesson. I'm ready to come home. Come and get me. You know, it could vary, splitting, you know, telling mom one thing, telling dad something else, using them against each other, you know, projecting outwards.
Yeah. Now, from the standpoint, I know that's one of the biggest issues that we get, or the parents that you know, that are weakening at that point. You know, that they've been waiting for so long to hear those words from their child going, everything's okay, I love you, I get it, I'm ready. How do you then convince the parents that this is only stage two? You know, that
right.
It's, you know, your child wants you to think it's stage five or whatever, but it really is only stage two. You know, how do you keep the parents to understand that that's what it is?
Well, education is the key, because once we start really talking about what it's like for that parent to have their child be uncomfortable, you know, what's it like for that parent to have their child be sad and missing home? What's it like for that child to be angry? Because oftentimes our kids enduring resistance are very angry. So they're, you know, angry at their parents. They're vacillating from anger to promises to whatever it might be. And so really, I think an exploration of, you know, what's it like for your child to be in a place where you can't fix it? And really doing some work around that is an important part. In addition, I think, you know, when the therapist has the ability to say, you know, this is coming.
Yeah.
You know, here's what's going to happen. And then it happens. Parents then begin to say, oh, okay, well, maybe they do know what they're doing.
Right.
You know, because a week goes by and sure enough, the kid is doing what we said that they were going to do. And the key to this really, Alan, is about helping our kids learn how to manage the uncomfortable feelings that are going to come up for them, and teaching our parents how to observe, being an interested observer, being a mentoring parent without having to rescue or enable them.
Right. No, I couldn't agree more. Now, if you can walk people through a typical day, in other words, a typical day at your program, as far as how much of it is schooling, how much of it is social involvement, and how much of it is therapeutic.
Sure. Our adolescent unit is separated by gender, so it is a segregated program, which we have found works the best. So boys live with boys and girls live with boys. I mean, girls live with girls. They wish they'd live with boys, but no.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kept very busy. There's programming for much of their day. They go to school for 6 hours, just like, you know, federal regulations. And there's interspersed with individual therapy, family therapy, group therapy. They're also provided with a myriad of psychoeducational programs such as anger management, boundaries and relationships, self-esteem groups. There's lots of opportunity for creativity. We have a writer's workshop. You know, there's fun things. You know, Friday night the girls unit does freeze dance. rec therapy.
Wait, you got to explain that one to me. I'm not sure I understand freeze dance.
Freeze dance is, you know, the kids will play music and then they stop the music. And when you stop the music, you have to freeze.
Okay.
And the girls love it.
So the girls unit sets this up, but is this something now that's the boys and girls now are allowed to dance together?
No, we separate by gender.
Okay.
But as there's a behavior program in the hospital, so as kids move up their levels, as they progress through the system, there's increasing opportunities for socialization with the opposite sex, as well as, you know, other privileges that come with being an upper level.
You know that.
So
go ahead.
Rec therapy, mm-hmm. All kinds of addiction programs. All of our kids receive education around addictions. And then if kids have substance abuse issues, they're provided with more intensive addiction programming.
You know, and while we're talking about the girls, because I know one of the things that we see quite often, but the self-esteem issue. And so you have the concept of having them separated, and which would suggest that, you know, they now don't have to focus so much of their being, and this is boys and girls actually, but right now I'm talking more about girls, on how they appear to the opposite sex. How much of this allows you to really work on their self-esteem to the point that they don't have to focus so much on that.
Well, I think that's an excellent point, Alan. For many of our girls, they developed their self-esteem around their sexuality. And so we are, you know, when they come here, part of the intensive work that we do is about, you know, exploring who they really are and what makes them unique and valuable without their sexuality and without their looks. So the dress code is very strict. You know, kids are not allowed to wear sexually, you know, suggestive clothing. And for many of the girls that come to Willow Springs, that's a whole different way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just kind of dressing for comfort instead of dressing for attraction. But we do a lot of work with all of the kids about developing that unique individual perspective of what are their strengths, what is the best thing about themselves, what makes them different and unique from everybody else in the world. And having that self-esteem really is a protective factor in terms of being able to establish healthy boundaries with others.
Yeah, I would certainly think so. So let's talk a little bit more about Willow Springs itself from the standpoint of how long it's been around and tell everybody a little bit about licensing. In other words, I think that sometimes there's a misnomer. And when I'm traveling or something and people start talking to me, they see me wearing, you know, a shirt that either says our company name or one of the program names. And and they'll ask questions about it. Let people know a little bit about the fact that this is something that is licensed, it is regulated, and explain kind of how that works.
Absolutely. Willow Springs has been around for 20 years, if you can imagine. So we certainly have been an important part of our community and, you know, an important part of developing the treatments that are now, you know, pretty accepted nationwide for good, cutting-edge adolescent treatment. We are licensed by the state of Nevada and regulated by the state of Nevada, as well as Joint Commission, and TriWest. TriWest is the insurance that is provided to the military in our country. And so all three of those regulatory boards, the state, Joint Commission, and TriWest, have their own, you know, standards that they look for, and we are fully meeting all of those standards. So they look at things like ratios, staff to patient ratios, nursing standards, physician standards, you know, the way the hospital is set up, safety, communication, procedures. I mean, they get down into, you know, how is communication handed off between one shift and the next. So these are very specific accreditation standards that we are looked at every day.
Now, is TriWest, is that what used to be Champus?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. So that is our military provider.
Okay. Yes, you can see I'm still kind of old school on some of that stuff.
Yeah, and about a third, actually, of our kids come to us with that TriWest insurance.
So, and are they coming from other countries, or are they primarily Western United States?
Mostly Western United States.
Okay. Let's see what I was going to touch on. Actually, I was going to take a break, so let me take a quick break, and we will be back in 1 minute. Here we go.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
We're back. So, you know, we talked a little bit about the fact that you've been around for 20 years. Tell us a little bit how treatment has changed over the past 20 years.
Well, certainly historical trends are a significant part of looking at this this model. You know, our acuity in terms of how sick our kids are, the behavior that they're exhibiting, the symptomatology has definitely increased. You know, we see self-harm, we see suicidal ideation, gestures, you know, the violent acting out, the defiant and oppositional behavior, the impaired family systems that are under financial pressures, the pressures of having blended families, and the complicated family trees that are now seems to be pretty much standard in our generation. You know, certainly I think that has definitely contributed to the acuity that we're seeing.
Now, are we also seeing, are we also seeing an increase in, from a gender standpoint, that the percentages now we're getting more females?
We definitely have more females than males. But again, I wonder if that's not about the, you know, the stereotype or the misconception that the criminal justice system gets involved more often with males than females. The criminal justice and the juvenile justice system specifically has the opposite trend. They
right.
see more males than females, and in treatment we see more females than males. But I don't know, I mean, males can certainly benefit from treatment, and our philosophy is that if kids get the treatment that they need, they can avoid becoming statistics in terms of being, you know, having long-term interactions with the criminal justice system. That's what we hope to avoid.
Well, and you're absolutely right, and it's something, and I've actually spoken on it, in fact, in Washington, D.C., based on, and I said, you know, from a funding standpoint, look, pay now or pay later, but we're going to pay. You know, let's work on helping now. If we work on helping now and get the help that we need, spend the money now, because you're going to spend it tenfold when we're now having to deal with paying for juvenile hall, paying for you know, paying for jailing people, you know, trying to house them that way. And then even when they get out, you still have additional problems. We still have issues where we are having to pay for them, either it's through welfare or through them going back to jail and having to deal with it that way. So I agree completely. If we can make those decisions to spend the money now to get the help while they're young.
Absolutely. And the research is clear on the other side as well, Alan, that jailing these kids, that putting these kids, now you heard me earlier talk about, you know, advocating for families to get the juvenile justice system involved. But if you look at the statistics, because the truth is that the juvenile justice system provides money for treatment.
Right.
That's where we are. We have had a lot of success in our, you know, advocacy work, having the judges in our country recognize that treatment does work, that treatment is a way to keep these kids out of the adult criminal justice system. And that, in fact, to put a kid in the criminal justice system, to send them to juvenile hall, where they are not going to get the treatment that they need, in fact creates criminals.
Yeah.
Kids come out of juvenile hall more adept at being criminals than they are, you know, in terms of working on the issues that have led them to this behavior.
Well, I agree. It's a training ground.
Yep. So in terms of the historical trends, we're certainly also seeing shorter lengths of stay, managed care. I know that that's a huge issue in our country with private insurance. You know, mental health benefits have been, you know, one of the things that has always been on the chopping block. So we're certainly having to deal with that as well. Mm-hmm. How do we provide good treatment in a shorter length of stay? Because that's been dictated by insurance.
Right. And it goes back to the same thing that we're seeing now, even in our, you know, from a political standpoint, is, you know, try and cut back now and spend tomorrow's dollars, you know, and mm-hmm. and we need to get them to focus on the fact that, no, we need those dollars need to be here now dealing with this problem. Or we can't just put it off and say, okay, well, you know what? If they go bad, we'll deal with it then. We can't keep pushing it off. We've got to deal with it now. So I couldn't agree more.
Well, because these kids are our future.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, these are the kids that are going to be running this country in a generation. So, you know, I can't think of a better way to spend our money than to provide our kids with good treatment now instead of waiting until they have decompensated to the point where they're, you know, impacting society as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I don't want everybody to get the wrong idea. We're not trying to suggest that, you know, that we're worried about, you know, all of the kids and everything else. This is an incredibly intelligent generation. I mean, these are kids that are learning an incredible amount of information faster than we have ever imagined. But let's understand that in some ways that makes it hard for some of them, and we want to help all of them.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've got about 9 minutes, but I want to make sure that we do find out, how can people get a hold of you, either through a website or through a phone number, if they have additional questions for you?
Well, our website is willowspringscenter.com. So that's easy.
All right.
And our phone number is 1-800-448-9454. And they can ask to speak with admissions.
Okay. And
our admissions director is Jennifer Von Arks, and she's a licensed clinician and is, you know, highly skilled at dealing with families in crisis.
Well, that's great. And if you're driving and you're not able to write that down or you didn't get it, feel free to also go to our site at answersforthefamily.com. That's answers, the numeral, for thefamily.com. Send in any question, or even if it's just, hey, I couldn't write that down, how do I get in contact? And we will get the information to you.
Thank you so much, Alan.
Well,
that's great.
Well, you're very welcome. Knowing we just have a little bit of time left, what is some of the other information that you would like to get out there to both the parents and the professionals that are out there about your program and about residential treatment as a whole?
Well, I think the important part, too, is that we use the treatment team approach. One of the historical trends for all of, you know, mental health and for many medical programs, actually, in this country, has been towards evidence-based practice. So one of the researched and certainly documented strategies is by using a treatment team approach. So all of our kids that come here, as we've talked about, are assigned a therapist. That therapist has a small caseload to provide the intensive talk therapy that the kid is requiring and that the family can benefit from. In addition, there is a psychiatrist assigned to that child, or if, in fact, the child is already working with a psychiatrist, that psychiatrist may be providing treatment here as well. The psychiatrist sees our kids every week, and they do the medication management. So as I had stated, you know, the kids have to have a psychiatric diagnosis, and oftentimes medication is going to be an important component towards effective treatment. In addition, our kids get education, and so they'll have an advisor, an educational advisor assigned to them. They'll have rec therapy, which is our wonderful rec therapy program that we even have a ropes course. Are you familiar with that, Alan?
Not only am I familiar, but I have gone through a ropes course before, and I think afterwards they suggested that I needed to go into therapy.
So the ropes challenge is actually an experiential outdoor challenge that is an amazing experience for our kids. And we have one of those courses set up on site at the facility. So the rec therapist is also an active part of the treatment team, as well as addictions. So if our kids come in, and many of our kids do have comorbidity with substance abuse issues, they'll be provided with an addictions therapist as well as educational programming. Our nurses are highly skilled, and so nursing is definitely a part of our treatment team. Dietary service, if our kids come with eating disorders as a comorbidity, or they're wanting to look at healthier eating styles, they'll be provided with dietary services. The family is a part of the treatment team, and as well as the milieu. That's actually a very important part of our treatment program. So kids, as I had briefly mentioned, are exposed to and participating in our behavior program here in the hospital, and mm-hmm. they have tons of opportunities to really challenge themselves in terms of their responsibility. And so really it is about accountability and consequences. If you are making good choices, really good things are going to be happening for you, and you're going to have much more responsibility and much more privileges available. And consequently, if you're making bad choices, then your world is going to be that much more limited.
Exactly.
So that's a really important thing. And the peer culture. We have a positive peer culture philosophy in our milieu. And what that means is that the kids really encourage one another to make positive choices. And we establish a lot of intrinsic rewards for leadership. Because we know in adolescence that kids' primary influence is going to be their peer group.
That's right. Now and I agree completely. And in fact, that's some of the things that I've wished that we could get our public schools to initiate is more leadership training, more team building, more. There's a seminar that's on intuitive joy. Give them a course in intuitive joy. We don't teach them how to just be happy. I mean, so these type of things make perfect sense. And to go a little bit more about the ropes course, I think the ropes courses should also be in the public school system because of how it allows them to learn more about themselves, and it also helps them with team building all in one. I mean, I think it's incredible.
Right, so you're seeing that positive peer culture move from the milieu in the hospital then to outside in a smaller group with uh-huh. the ropes course.
Definitely. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on. This has been just a really good experience. It's been really good to get that information out there. Again, if you can give them the website again, and just in case they missed it.
It's Willow Springs Center, all one word, .com.
Okay. Again, that's willowspringscenter.com. Lisa, thank you so much for coming on.
And thank you, Alan. Have a great day.
You too. Bye now. All right. That was Lisa Foley talking about Willow Springs Center. And again, I'm very appreciative to have her on. If you are out there and if you would like to be a guest on this show, please go to our website, answers4thefamily.com. We would love to hear from you. Again, this show is for you. It is for the parents. It is for the professionals. We are bringing resources out there for you to be able to just click and listen. In this day and age, it's getting a little more expensive to fly around and check everything out. So I'm hoping that this brings enough information out to everybody that that they find it valuable. And to share a little bit more about what's been going on with the show, I've received some very positive emails and phone calls directed towards almost all of the guests. Many of these are success stories from family who've had a teen graduate from one of the many programs that either we've transported to or somebody who's just been on the air. They've been on the air, and then we get something back of somebody saying, you know, that was so great to hear that. My child went through that program, and here's what happened. And I love getting the success stories. So if you have them out there, keep those coming. That keeps us pumped up. And also, for everybody else out there, although I happen to have the microphone right now, understand it's the educational consultants, the therapist, the specialized program personnel out there, listening or not, that are dedicating their time and service to others. Those are the ones that I'm thankful for. So for you, I thank you for all that you do to make our lives better and the lives of our young people. So remember, you are helping those that represent our next generation. Again, I thank you very much. Have a great day.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio. Just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet.